session is on education for empathy and efficacy. And I'd like to start with a little video here on the geography of the region that my son Greg Mortensen is building schools in.
From region to region, very simply, life is different. From the most remote village where our first school was built, the Greg Mortensen Corfe village, that's one of the most remote villages in Pakistan. In Corfe, the children are growing up at the foothills of the Western Himalayas, at the Karakoram mountain range, and they're living in such a remote and also a very harsh environment where they work alongside their families to grow food and raise animals to live. When you come further down the valleys and you get closer to the cities and actually closer to resources, the children are growing up still obligated to help out their families with growing food and raising animals, but they also have little more access to resources in the city. So some children will leave school and go work in the city like Skyward. Then we get into Afghanistan, and we're building in regions that are nomadic communities. Traveling their animals for the different seasons. And so we're working with their communities to help them set up a system where education will work for them. They live in four different regions throughout the year, and we want to help support them. And their children are growing up very differently because they're nomadic. They move month after month depending on where the green grass is for the animals and where they can grow the best food. Since the earthquake in 2005, the communities and the children and the families are still greatly affected by the tragedy of the earthquake. It's an area where we're rebuilding schools.
Just a little brief introduction to the areas where the schools were being built. And tonight I'm going to be talking about more about the Pennies for Peace program. And as I said, how many of you were here the first day? A few of you. So I'll just repeat this part. I was talking about how when this program started, and it started in the school where I was principal, children bringing pennies, my emphasis was all on what it is doing in those schools for the kids in Pakistan and Afghanistan. But as I have been speaking in more schools, talking to more children, talking to more parents, I am seeing what it's doing for children here. I really see this sense of empathy for children there and the sense of efficacy. This efficacy, I can do it. I see children knowing that they're making a difference in the world. So I'd like to start with just a DVD here about the Pennies for Peace program. And when you see that little thing, it means it's coming. And what I'd like you to watch here is they're going to be interviewing some students in this country for the sense that you can see in them of both empathy and efficacy. They know they are making a difference. That's my granddaughter.
Penny by itself doesn't buy a whole lot. In fact, most of us think of pennies as kind of worthless. I want to tell you about a place where a penny can buy a pencil, where enough pennies collected together can build a school, where pennies can help kids reach for their dreams. Hi, I'm Amira Mortensen, and I want to tell you about Pennies for Peace. In 1993, my dad, Greg, went to Pakistan to climb K2, the second highest mountain on Earth.
What was it like not making it to the summit of K2?
Well, I was really disappointed because I wanted to get the top. I didn't know that that was only a way that I would find a better mountain to climb. That's helping kids go to school in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
When my dad came down from the mountains, he was really sick. He stumbled into a small village called Korpe. The people there gave him food and a place to sleep, even though they were very, very poor. Do you notice the kids weren't in school?
There's no schools. There was a kid, 84 kids sitting outside of the dirt. Most of them were riding the sticks of the sand. What's really strange is there's no teacher there.
Yeah.
And I asked them, I said, where's your teacher? They said, well, he's in the next village because we can't afford his $1 a day salary, so he spends half the time in one school and the other half the week with the kids in Korpe. Can you imagine that here in the States, if there was a class without a teacher for half the week?
I'm pretty sure kids wouldn't go to school. Before he left Korpe, my dad promised his new friends he would come back and go to school. It was harder than he ever imagined. When he got home to the U.S., he sold everything he owned to raise money. But it was not enough, and no one wanted to donate. His mother, my grandmother, saw his frustration.
It was tough those first years, but he worked through it.
She was the principal of Westside Elementary in Wisconsin, and she invited him to talk to her students.
Oh, it's so good to be here at Westside.
When the kids there heard my dad's story, they knew they had to help.
It was 1995, so I was in second grade. It was mind-blowing as a child to not understand that everybody didn't have what you had, being given the opportunity to, they don't have a school, but here's what you can do to give them a school. It gives you that, instills that hope.
So they started collecting pennies.
And at the end of 6 weeks, Westside School had collected 62,340 pennies. Whoa. That adds up to $623.40. So the largest donation you got was from kids.
I mean, think about it. It wasn't famous people. It wasn't rich people. It wasn't even adults. It was kids who first helped up and they did it with a penny.
So that's how Pennies for Peace began.
One candle, bringing light for peace and hope for all the world.
Since then, my dad has returned to Pakistan many times. His organization, the Central Asia Institute, has helped to build dozens and dozens of schools in Pakistan and Afghanistan, open to both boys and girls.
And I'm like, what? Why can't girls go to school?
Some girls don't have access to schools because sometimes they have no money, sometimes they have no permission to go to school.
We are privileged because we are girls and we don't see an education as something that people are deprived of every day. So to know that a lot of girls our age across the world can't go to class regularly and are deprived and are bullied and teased because of it is kind of amazing.
I think everyone should have equal rights and that if a male can go to school, a female can, they get the same education, they can get the same job, that ain't no one better than another person.
How did you feel when you first heard about pain?
Like the whole thing, it
silence is a privilege, right?
Pennies are making a difference.
I can become a doctor and help a lot of people.
This is a good way for Pakistan and Afghanistan children, especially the girls, to get really good education so they can decide on what they want to be, who they want to be, and how they want to do their job.
Because it felt schools like the main institute of like stopping these things, stopping terrorism, really is by educating the next generation.
So we're all connected by trade, and I think that too often we see each country as a puzzle piece that are scattered around, and we really need to see it as a whole puzzle completed.
My dad wrote a book about his experiences in Pakistan. It's called Three Cups of Tea.
Guy Mortensen gives faces to these kids and to these people who many of us in America don't know anything about, and who many of us don't learn anything about in our school classrooms. And to be able to see, we want to help these girls, but to be able to read the stories of these children and know that they're human beings that have tears and sweat and live and have dreams and want to learn.
They have aspirations to do something in their lives, meaningful in America. And in Pakistan, when I meet these middle school age students or high school age students, they also have dreams and goals. But it's that theirs usually just stays dreams.
It's important to help people because it's not nice to leave people out, and it's nice to include people and not let them have an opportunity to not go to school. And they need to go to school if they need to learn things. They can't just go on with life without knowing what's 5 plus 5.
Now, there's a young reader's version, a picture book, and even a song. Back when my dad first went to the little village of Corbe, he was a stranger. But he learned, once you share a meal and a cup of tea, you have a chance to learn more about each other. By the time you have a second cup of tea, you become friends.
Fighting terrorism, or people who promote terrorism, that's really based in fear. But promoting peace is based in hope. And the real enemy, I think, whether it's in America, or Afghanistan, or in Africa, the real enemy is ignorance, and it's ignorance that we take with.
How about the capital of Pakistan? What was that one? Shazer, tell me. Very good. Islamabad. That's exactly right.
Subjects like geography, math, literature, and social studies all tie into the Pennies for Peace program.
The Any Connection!
Teachers can download lesson plans from the Pennies for Peace website, penniesforpeace.org.
As a language arts teacher, it was a great opportunity for my students to use reading strategies to read this difficult article, attack vocabulary, and then get into actually comprehending a difficult passage, which is much what they are tested on. So it fits, but the fact of getting students to really understand the importance and value of their education, what better way for them to compare and contrast what they have with what someone doesn't have, and maybe some of them will learn to value their education even more. And if that happens,
and kids can learn how to organize their own Pennies for Peace program.
This is Rabbit Hood Week, and we're trying to raise $50,000 for a girl's school in Pakistan. We built the entire school, and
Peace Day, right? What countries have we been focusing on for Peace Day? What are they, John?
Pakistan and Afghanistan.
And
we all know no two schools are exactly the same. So you can make your Pennies for Peace campaign reflect your own schools and goals.
We do have more peace in the world.
We do it as part of our Peace Day celebrations because if you have school, you're peaceful, and then peace goes around the world.
For my birthday party, I raised lots of pennies and dollars out of these pennies. These pennies were really special to get because I wanted to count them at the bank, and I got $250 and 120 cents.
From that one penny that got started West Side today, over 100 million pennies have been raised to help kids with school supplies and go to school in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
We have so much here and they have so little, and it feels good to help somebody. And it's just pennies are so little that it makes a huge difference.
Touched my heart because it's amazing how much people bring that much pennies.
So what's your help for Pennies for Peace?
Well, that thing is to help kids go to school around the world, and the other thing is it's inspiring hundreds of kids in America to do things on their own.
Join Pennies for Peace and make a difference. Encourage peace one penny at a time.
Well, did you get an idea of what's happening for the children here in this country who are involved? You know, they know that they're making a difference. And by the way, it ended with kites flying.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what country that's in?
Afghanistan,
yes. The kite runner. Flying kites is a national pastime there. And during the Taliban time, it wasn't allowed. So the kids can fly kites once again now. Well, I'm going to repeat a little for those of you that were here the other day, but my emphasis, my thing was, okay, these pennies, this money is going to build schools in Pakistan and Afghanistan, but more and more I'm seeing what it does for children here. And I'm just using the Pennies for Peace as one thing. There are many ways that children can reach out to others. But it really came to my attention when I was in a school in northern Minnesota, and this little six-year-old kindergarten boy came up to me and said, I didn't have a penny. So I went, took my dollar to the bank and bought some, and then he asked me if that was cheating, and I assured him it wasn't cheating, and he said, well, what are they going to do with my 100 pennies? And I asked him what he wanted them to do, and he said, I want them to buy 100 pencils so 100 kids can write. And right there, I saw how a six-year-old was being so empowered. And I also told this story of this school in Colorado, I think it was Fort Collins, that they really, I don't know how many pennies they collected, and somewhere along the line, they lost track of how many they had. So the students were really, really interested in getting that money to the bank so they could find out how much they raised. And the bank said, we just can't handle that many pennies at one time. You're going to have to bring them in small amounts, and we'll keep track. Well, one fourth grade class was really upset. I mean, here they had collected this money for schools for kids in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and the bank wouldn't even take it. So they wrote a letter to the editor expressing their concerns and their disappointment. Three other banks in town said, we'd be glad to take all the pennies at once. And one of the banks said, we'll send our armored car over to get it. Well, you probably can guess where that school is banking with now. And as I go around speaking, a lot of children ask me, well, what's going to happen with my 15 pennies? Or a school might say, what's going to happen with the money we gave? And I'd like to read you a few letters, but before I do that, I'm going to, I just want to show a couple of pictures so you understand a couple of the letters. So I'm going to go through pictures very fast here. Pennies for Peace. This is a school that the Taliban have destroyed. And as I said the other day, they have destroyed or closed over 2,000 schools in Afghanistan, over 650 in Pakistan. But despite that, in 2000, 10 years ago, when the Taliban was in charge in Afghanistan, there were 800,000 students in school. Today there are almost 9 million, and 2.5 million of those are girls. So even though we see destruction like this, we can have hope to know that school enrollment has really increased. And I think one thing that is so important, the first word in the Quran, in the revelation to Muhammad, is Iqra, read. And the first two chapters talk about how everyone should seek knowledge, including daughters and sisters. So what the Taliban are doing is not what their religion advocates. But if you want to have power, have an illiterate group. I want to show you this picture because this is a classroom Greg found in Afghanistan. It's a bombed out personnel carrier. And this is what it looked like inside. And the other picture I wanted, well, let's go back to this one where the girls were. This is girls studying outside. Their teacher is an ex-Taliban. If in Islam, if you go on jihad, and jihad can be positive, it can be going to university, secondary school, it can be going to the city, getting money to buy land. Jihad can be positive, but it also can be suicide bombing, Al-Qaeda, Taliban. But if you go on jihad without your mother's permission, it's very, very disgraceful. Educated women are not letting their sons join the Taliban or go join Al-Qaeda. So educated women are really a bulwark against this extremism. And all of the people, when they become educated and know what the Quran really says, will realize suicide is prohibited, it's forbidden, and that it isn't a glorious thing to be closing schools. Now I don't want that one. Let's get rid of that. Here's the other picture I wanted to show you. When the family went to Pakistan in 2007, my daughter, a granddaughter, Amira, who was 10 then, told her dad there was something really wrong with all the schools. Well, he was pretty proud of the schools, and he didn't know what that was. And she said, you don't have any playground equipment. So they have started putting swings and slides in all the schools. And these children who have to get up very, very early now have to get up earlier because after they've done their chores, had their cup of tea, maybe a chapati if they're lucky, will run to school to be able to play on the swings and slides. It's been a big thing for them. Well, in Baltistan or in Pakistan, they've kind of built all the schools in this one mountainous area. They're doing something different in Afghanistan. They're building a school here and then leapfrogging with the hopes that in between in those villages, maybe the government, maybe NATO troops, maybe the Aga Khan will build schools in between. And they'd like to ring the area where the Pashtun, where most of the Taliban are recruited from, they'd like to kind of build a necklace around that. And the board of directors of Central Asia Institute said maybe in 10 or 15 years they could start building schools right in the compounds in that area to start educating that group of people. Well, a year ago, some of the shura, the village elders, and some Taliban and ex-Taliban came to Lalander village and they wanted to see the school. And the headmaster said, certainly, and this is what happened. They spent over an hour on the swings, and then the headmaster said, well, don't you want to come and see the inside of the school? And they said, no, we have seen enough. We want you to come and build a girls' school with a playground in our village. And that village is Mullah Omar's village, the head of the Taliban in Afghanistan. As I said the other day, my solution for world peace is a playground in every compound in Afghanistan. And when I wrote to a cousin about this, he said, you know, that's interesting. I just read a research study on serial killers. Came out of England. There's one thing they all had in common. They never had fun as children. And look at these elders, the fun they're having on the swings. And that's what they want for their children. Well, I showed you those couple of pictures. But I'd like to read you a few letters I got from children in a school in Anchorage. Dear Mrs. Mortensen, your assembly was touching. It really made me think about how other countries are so different. I actually appreciate being able to go to school now that I know what it's like not to be able to go to school. Thank you so much. I would like to thank you for coming. One thing I thought was very sad was that most of the girls in Pakistan and Afghanistan don't go to school. Your speech was awesome. Well, I don't know about that, but it really made me think how other countries are so poor. I now think of almost everything different. I feel so bad that they have to teach their parents how to read, which a lot of girls are doing. You changed the thinking of my life in a good way. The message was heartbreaking, and I almost cried. I have to tell you about this one. This school raised about $1,400, and it costs about $20 a year to pay for everything a child needs to go to school, including their uniform in a lot of places. Okay, I almost cried, but at least we made 70 kids worth of a difference. Thank you for letting me make a difference. Thank you for coming to our school. One thing that struck me as crazy is that the Taliban destroy schools even though their Bible says to read. I really appreciate your coming. You made me change my thinking about how lucky we are about going to school. I thought that the video you showed us was phenomenal. While you were talking, I kept wondering how those kids could like going to school on a personnel carrier while I go to a really nice school. That really made me thinking that I should appreciate everything I get and that I get to go to school. Thank you for coming. I'll never forget about how many schools there aren't in the world. I think that is so messed up. Thank you for coming. You touched my heart with how you said we help build a school. What I thought was funny was when you said how the Taliban dropped their weapons and went and swang on the swings. So this is what children are saying. And when I'm talking about raising children with a sense of empathy, we have to give them opportunities. Little babies will start crying when they hear another baby cry. They've done some research to show that a young child, as young as 14 months, if an adult is reaching up to try to get something out of a cupboard or something, the child will try to help them with it. So there is a lot of empathy, and I think we have to give them chances to do that. And then the sense of efficacy. Greg right now is saying, how many of you had heard from our news media that there's almost 9 million students going to school in Afghanistan now? Shouldn't we hear about that? Isn't that just terrific? And so it's this sense of discouragement and fear. And a lot of our little younger children hear about this and they think, well, there's nothing I can do about it. But if they're giving pennies, there's a boy in Oregon who heard about children in South Africa having nothing to play. He has started raising money and has bought 6 or 7 empty fields where the kids can go and play soccer. And this is a child doing that. There was another school in Oregon that was, they were raising pennies, and their county was closing libraries. So they started raising money to keep the library open. Well, when adults, and I guess when the county commissioners heard these kids are, you know, getting pennies and dimes to keep the library open, that library is open now. And those are the kinds of things that are going to empower children. Doesn't have to be pennies for peace. I have, talking to people, seeing people, it doesn't work if it's for your own school or your own church or your own playground. It has to be a reach out thing to really help them with this sense of empathy and efficacy. And we can help them with that. And since I see older people here, the other thing that can help children do that, because it helps them have their identity, is for you to tell them the stories. The stories of your youth, of your family. When Greg is speaking here in the United States, he always asks, how many of you have heard about World War II or the Depression or the Civil Rights Movement or the 60s? How many of you have heard that from your parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles? And he said maybe 10% of the students. In Pakistan and Afghanistan, all of them had. And that's why, as the children are busier in school, that's why in the CAI schools, they have added storytelling to the curriculum. And the elders come right into the schools to tell the stories. It's through those stories that we transfer our values and our faith. So I'd like to encourage you to do that. And I'm going to have some time for questions, but before I start that, I'm going on an entire entirely different thing because it's something I'm very excited about. And I do see it something that is helping children have this sense of efficacy and learning mathematics. I was fortunate enough to be principal in a school in Wisconsin. And there is some really exciting research coming out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison in math with young children. They studied for almost 8 years. And you know one of their major findings? Children going into first grade could solve more problems than children leaving first grade. They gave the problem, 5 children go to visit grandma. She gives them each 3 cookies. How many cookies does she need? Most of the children, if they didn't have 15, they'd have 13, 16, something like that. Do you know what they said when they were leaving first grade? 5 children, 3 cookies? 8.
Oh.
They'd learned how to add. So they have this new program called Cognitively Guided Instruction, and I saw a lesson that totally fascinated me. So I'd just like to share that with you. Nothing about this, but I think it's so interesting. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Okay, say the class is 16 people. They went to the orchard the next week, first grade. The next week, the teacher said, you know, we each got 3 apples when we went to the orchard. I wonder how many apples that was. Can first graders do 3 times 16? In this method, you don't teach a method. Okay, this is what one little boy did. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, till he got to the end. And that was his answer. One boy had everybody go up and draw 3 lines on the blackboard, and then he would circle them in 5s, and he counted that way. One little girl went 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 23, 34, 35, 36, 37. She couldn't count by 3s, but she could count by 2s. And what really blew my mind, one little boy said, and in their class they had 24 kids, he said, well, 24 is almost 25. And 25 cents is a quarter. And 3/4 is 75 cents. So it would be, and he went 75, 74, 73. So he was off 1 cent because he started going backwards the other way. Blew my mind. And I think that also is a way we can help children have a sense of efficacy, this math program, but just, hey, give them a problem and don't tell them how to solve it. So pennies for peace. And a penny works so well because it is so available. When Westside School had the program and the children were going to start, a wise first grade teacher said, let's have it be only pennies. If it's only pennies, even the poorest child in school is going to be able to be part of it. And everybody was able to bring a penny. Everybody had a sense, I am making a difference. How many of you were raised on a farm? What would happen if you didn't do your chores? What would happen if you were supposed to feed the chickens and you just didn't do it?
Chickens were hungry.
Yeah, and then what would happen? They'd die, they'd quit laying eggs. And I give that example because I had a cousin who didn't do it for a couple of days. and they figured out why the hens had quit laying. But your efforts were absolutely essential for the whole family. So you developed a sense of efficacy, which our kids these days, they have so few opportunities. Carrying out the garbage just doesn't do the same thing for you as contributing to the welfare of the family. So think about things you can have that can empower children. The pennies for peace, I see as a really great thing. And think about ways that you can help them be empathetic. And a lot of you have stories and a lot of you have examples of things you have done. And they should know about that. And it's going to make them wiser and more empathetic people. Now I'm preaching at you. We have a little time if you have questions. And if you don't have questions, I'm going to finish up here.
You said, I think when we were talking this morning, I asked you if any of the schools, of the CEI schools, had been bombed or...
No, none of them have. One of them was threatened, and the villagers essentially just drove them off. And the commandant sent some of his troops to that area with orders to shoot to kill anyone who tried to destroy the school. And the two female teachers are escorted to and from school with one of the commandant's troops, who has his AK-47 when he escorts them to and from school. But there haven't been Taliban back in that village.
And how many schools have been built so far?
142, and they're building 20 more in Afghanistan and 6 more in Pakistan. And in Pakistan now they're concentrating more on scholarships, so these people who've gone through the school can get further training and become nurses, doctors. 6 women are in medical school from the CAI schools. I think that's so exciting.
Has it made a difference, the changes that's happening with our military over there?
The 3 cups of tea is required reading for anyone in counterinsurgency that's going to Afghanistan. It's on the list of 10 suggested books for any troops going, not just counterinsurgency. When General McChrystal was there, one of the men that works in Greg's organization brought in elders, and he sat down and listened to them, and they expressed their concerns, so they had that going on. Of course, General McChrystal, with that article in Rolling Stones, is gone. The American media, what I heard, it was a seamless transition with General Petraeus, who knew that. But Greg said it wasn't, because for all of these elders, all the shura, the elders who are kind of the rulers or the, and I can back up there, you don't automatically become in the shura because you get old and you're not voted upon, but it's your leadership qualities. And it consists of farmers, ex-Taliban, poets, but they're kind of the leaders of the community. And they were going in and talking to General McChrystal, and they had built a relationship with him, and now they're going to have to start all over again with another person. So although we may have seen it as seamless, it's a huge change for them. They're going to have to start from step one. But General Petraeus is a good listener too. And Greg really does think our military is ahead of our government. He sees them doing more with the people, them doing more regionally, and our government is pretty much government to government. And he said in Afghanistan, here, and I think this would be true for most of you, here he says, I'm an American citizen, I'm a Montanan, and I'm a Lutheran of Norwegian heritage. There they will say, I'm Sunni or Shia, I'm Pashtun, Balti, Tajik, and last of all, I'm Afghan. So they don't see their country as where they're from. They see their region, but their religion, Sunni or Shia, is the most important to them. And that's the first thing they'd identify themselves with. And then if they're Pashtun, they'd probably identify with the family, the large family or clan group they are, before even being Pashtun. It really isn't a country. So, unless you have other questions, thank you so much for coming. And remember, there are things we can do to help our children become empathetic and have a sense of efficacy. And I think something like the Pennies program, it's doable for them. And it can be for anything that they get beyond themselves. Thank you.